Rachmanos is a fascinating sugya. Certainly in the category of a cheerful sugya, we have so many unpleasant things we've had to talk about recently in the news elsewhere and in other contexts. So to be able to focus on Rachmanos is connected with a happy day, and it's a happy mitzvah, and it's also a very enjoyable sugya as far as the lumdus is concerned and as far as the themes are concerned. And to give a little bit of historical background to this topic, and we'll see how far we can get today, we'll probably have to break it up into chunks, but Rachmanos is just a fascinating display of a certain phenomenon in halacha and in lumdus. That we know in lumdus, for example, we see often there's a certain chakira that the svarim have, and then there is an effort to make all of the sources fit into the chakira. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it goes nicely, sometimes it feels a little forced. Here there is a really fascinating reality that, as we'll see, there was a chakira that was popularized by one of the greatest of the Achronim, and it had such an impact that it really influenced almost every discussion of the halacha of this topic afterwards. And the loyalty to this framework that you find in the later Svarim is very striking. And that's something to appreciate, and you can also question, but it's also something to analyze carefully. But you find that in many places, but I think this is somewhat of an extraordinary example of a tremendous loyalty for, I don't know, it's been at least 150 years or more, no more, it's got to be a lot more, maybe close to 200 years that this chakira has had such an impact on the course of the halachic discussion. It's something very fascinating to ponder. So what am I talking about? The author of this analysis is the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer, in his Shuvas, in Siman Kuf Tzadi Vav, addresses a Ramah. The Ramah has a psak, which was controversial, and doesn't seem to have an earlier mucker in a major sense, as far as a Gemara or the clear Rishonim. And there was controversy about this Ramah, I guess, for a couple hundred years until it reached the desk of the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer proposed a certain way to consider the question. What was the issue? So we know that we have an obligation of Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu. So that is a direct quote from Megillas Esther, the ninth parak of Megillas Esther, where we are told there of all of the four mitzvos of Purim. Four obligations: to read the Megillah, to have a suda, and to give Mishloach Manos and Matanos L'Kohanim. And these mitzvos, on the surface, seem to be the Rabbanan. However, many treat them with a more severe status, with a more chamer status, because of the assumption that they are what's known as Divrei Kabbalah. Divrei Kabbalah is a reference to that which is in scripture, meaning not necessarily Chumash, but in Nach. And if it's not in Chumash, it's not going to be a Din Minat Torah, presumably it surely be a Din Rabbanan. But if it has the extra bump of being mentioned in Nach, so then that gives it a higher status at Divrei Kabbalah. And a number of Achronim took the lead from that to assume that they're actually treated like Dinei Menat Torah. Somewhat debatable, but that became a very influential voice in the whole discussion. So you find l'halacha that many poskim take that path. It really was started by the Shagas Aryeh and his Sefer Terei Evin. But many Achronim follow this path, that Shailas and Hilchos Rachmanos and in Hilchos Megillah and the like are treated like Dinei Menat Torah, Safek L'Chumra, that we work off the assumption that Divrei Kabbalah are like Divrei Torah. So there's more to say about that, but just to put that on your radar screen for now. So the question about how exactly to fulfill the mitzvah of Rachmanos is a significant one. The Gemara has a little bit to say about it on Daf Zayin Megillah, but not so much. Doesn't really systematically go through all the Didim. Has a few stories about it over there. And the Ramah has a big Chiddush. The Ramah says that, let's say he comes per morning, I want to deliver, before he comes over the house, I'm going to call Shmuel and say, I want to deliver a Shalchmanis to your house. So Shmuel says, oh, you know, it's so nice of you to call, but because of my outstanding work as a shir assistant, I have been flooded with Shalchmanises, and I can't even open the door to my house. Like, if you would come, like, I wouldn't be able to let you in because I'm buried in probably hundreds of thousands of gifts of Shalchmanis, and I don't feel like there's any more I could handle. So thank you so much for your offer, but it's the thought that counts. You could stay in New Jersey. You don't have to cross the bridge. And it's okay. Thank you anyway. So let's say that was the only attempt I made on Purim to give Shalchmanis. Am I Yotze Shalchmanis that way? I didn't actually transfer anything to anybody. Not even through Bitcoin. Right? So nothing actually was transmitted to anyone else. So is that sufficient for the chiyuv of Shalchmanis? So the Ramah actually writes, yes. It says that does it. I am Yotze, and now I can focus on all the other mitzvos. So that was surprising to many. He writes this in the Darche Moshe also, where he quotes it from the Ma'ariv Brin. And many of the commentaries look in the Pri Chadash, and you look in the Korban Hasanal to the Rush, where he talks about this. Many were surprised. They said, why should that be? Doesn't the Pasuk say, Mishloach Manos Yishtoriyehu, that you should actually send the gifts? Why would I have the thought that it's the thought that counts, that I just have to offer and that's enough? I think you would have to actually give the Shalchmanis. So is this true? So this question bounced around for a few hundred years, apparently, until it reached the desk of the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer wrote a tshuva where he analyzed this issue. And he said that you have to consider what exactly is the purpose of Shalchmanis. Why did Chazal institute this? And still Chazal, even say it to Rav Kabbalah, but I mean, it still comes from Chazal, but it is given the gushpanka, it's given the seal of approval, possibly to be treated like a daraisa, but still Chazal's enactment. So why would it be that Chazal made this rule? So he did a little research, and he came up with two theories as to what Shalchmanis is about. And that formed two stadim of a chakira here. What were the two theories? So on the one hand, so there is a tshuva of the Trumas Hadesha. Trumas Hadesha is one of the great German Rishonim. It's in Kuf Yud Aleph. We'll discuss maybe later in the week. His writings are very, very significant as far as Parsha Zachar is concerned also. So his major voice in other halachos, both in terms of Parsha Zachar and in terms of Shalchmanis. So Trumas Hadeshen discusses that perhaps the purpose of Shalchmanis is in order to help with another one of the mitzvahs of Purim. What's that? That we have an obligation of a suda on Purim. And it's certainly possible that not everyone is going to be in a position to have the suda they'd like to have. Yes, sir.
Wouldn't that falter, like Matan Sefer Yonim, a little bit?
Oh, so that's a great question. So we'll have to talk about that. Let's just try to flesh this out first. But it's going to be significant what exactly is the distinction between Matan Sefer Yonim and Shalchmanis. On the surface, just to address it initially, so it seems like indeed they are closely linked, which is a part of why we're talking about it, right? Because we want to discuss them together and then synergize it back into our current sugya of staka. So the notion that there is a linkage between the two seems to, within this theory, very much be the case. But if your question is, so why do I need both? So there is a difference, even if they're related, that Matanos Levyonim, as we'll discuss, is then meant to be the very blatant, clear staka for people who are actually Evyonim, for people who are actually poor. And we have some beautiful synergy coming up. There's really going to be some, so much interesting stuff to say over the next week. I'm very excited. Anyway, but Mishnah Nesadah, Ma'ariv B'Simcha, it's just a lot you'll see that will interconnect and will expand our appreciation of this concept. But in any event, so Matanos Levyonim is really kind of like a mega tzedakah. It's like everything that's true about normal tzedakah and more. So it's certainly a tzedakah in the most clear and blatant sense, and that's something Bez Hashem over next week we'll see more about. While Matanos Levyonim is clearly meant to be much more subtle and less obvious. And that's going to be a major theme today, that it accomplishes tzedakah-like goals, but is meant to do so in a fashion that is not overtly directed at aniyim, and is not meant to be perceived as only for aniyim specifically who meet such a threshold. And it shares an overall direction and an overall purpose, but in details like that, it's going to be very sharply distinct from Matanos Levyonim. So there'll be some details that we'll see that will be consistent with that distinction. But on the surface, that is the answer. I think that these are linked mitzvos. There's definitely a lot that ties together Matanos Levyonim and Shalach Manos. But there is also meant to be a distinction between them in these ways, and that they're going to play, those distinctions are going to play a big role in defining some of the terms of each mitzvah. So that's one possibility, that it's there to help with the suda. So to make sure that everyone has what they need to be able to have a proper perm suda, so that's why Chazal enacted Shalach Manos. The other possibility he attributes to the Manos Halevi. The Manos Halevi was written, and who wrote the Manos Halevi? Shlomo Halevi Alkebetz. Is that a familiar name?
Cool.
Luchadodi, exactly. So the author of Luchadodi, so he also wrote this particular line, which I would say is the second most famous line he ever wrote. It is a far second, so Lucha Dodi is certainly much, much, much more well-known than what we're about to quote, but Chassam Sofer did his part to bring this to prominence as well. But yes, it's definitely a far, far second to all of Lucha Dodi, but the author of Lucha Dodi also wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther. It's called Manos Halevi, and you can find that in many Maduras online, if you'd like to read it inside. And that's his commentary on the entire text of the Megillah. So if you look in the end of the ninth parak, where he talks about the pasuk of Mishloach Manos Lishlieyu, so he explains why is it that Chazal put this enactment here. It's to counteract the message of Haman. That Haman, when he's talking to Achashverosh and giving him this whole spiel about the Jews, we got to get rid of them. So he calls them Yeshna Yamechad Mefaisim Mefer. There's this nation that is scattered and dispersed, and they're terrible, and we should kill them. So we want to show that that's not what we are, even if we're geographically dispersed, but we are connected, and that's a part of what we've been emphasizing over these past weeks with the war situation, even if we're very far away, but we are still very much connected. And so we want to highlight the bonds between the Jewish people and strengthen those bonds. So therefore, the purpose of Shalach Manos is to be marbe shalom vereis, is to create greater bonds of friendship between the members of the Jewish people. And since the fastest way to a man's heart is through his stomach, so if you send gifts of food, so that's going to do a lot in order to strengthen those bonds of friendship. So, says the Chasam Sofer, if that's really the case, if these are the two possible reasons, so he thought this should affect the question of, is the Ramah correct? When the Ramah says, it's the thought that counts, that if I offer a Shalach Manas, and I'm told, let's emphasize for now, that it's not that it's thrown back in my face. It's graciously declined. As Shmuel said, this is wonderful. I don't need it. I have too much. So in that situation, the obligation of Shalach Manos has been fulfilled. That psak of the Ramah, is that correct? So the Chasam Sofer thought it depends on these two possibilities. Do you see how? Do you agree with his formulation? Do you see how it could depend on these two possibilities? Zach?
Well, if it's graciously declined, so that probably builds friendship.
Okay, so that's the assumption, right? That if the idea is that it's about creating these bonds, so then if, again, let's assume that it wasn't thrown back and rejected, but graciously declined, so then, yes, it's the thought that counts. So if you're able to generate that goodwill by making the offer, maybe indeed that is sufficient. However, if you take the other perspective, that it's there in order to help those who may need the assistance with the Suda, so then it doesn't make sense that what we call mechila, the waiving of the rights to get the shalach manos, that should be effective. Why is that? Well, if you think about it, that first of all, if we're going for a more subtle type of stucky here than matanos levyonim, so if we're going to say that we're looking for real levyonim, like we are with matanos levyonim, and only the people who actually need it should take it, but the people who don't need it are allowed or encouraged to be mochel, so nobody's going to want to take it. Everyone's going to feel pressure to be mochel and to say, oh, me, I don't need this, I'm fine. So that's something that we need to make sure to avoid. I recently saw a story in the name of Reb Chaim Moshe Grzinski that he discovered right before Pesach, it was Erev Pesach, he discovered that there was somebody in Vilna who didn't have enough for his Pesach Suda. And he had been, you could tell, but he was embarrassed to let anyone know that he couldn't afford a Pesach Suda. So therefore, he wasn't making it known to people that he needs, and he wasn't getting any assistance. So he tried to figure out how to make sure this guy would get assistance without embarrassing him. So as the person was talking to him, he very loudly declared, what? That's what happened? Treif. All your food is treif. The chicken is treif. The whole suda is treif. I machmir on that shayla that you asked. Nothing you have here is kosher. So everybody thought that he must have had enough for the suda, but he made some, there was something that came up in the kitchen that unfortunately trafed up all his food, and he had this unusual accident right before Pesach that meant he was left at the last minute without food. So everybody realized, okay, here's a wealthy guy who just had a kashrus issue, but now he doesn't have food, so we'll all try to step in and help him. So sometimes there is this embarrassment that people have. They don't want to be perceived as needing, and especially if we understand that that's what Shalach Manas is directed at, and then that's one of the ways in which it is sharply distinct from Matanos Levyonim, so it doesn't make sense that we're going to say that the people who need should take, and people who don't be Machu. Also, to add to it, that if that really were a way, so the cynical people, to go back to some of the topics we talked about in the concept, in the context of tzedakah, so they could very easily get a very cheap way out of the shalach manis. They'll just offer it to all their wealthy friends, and then they'll decline, and they won't have to actually send anything. So that's not going to be a very helpful possibility either. So if the purpose of shalach manis is to help those people in need, that's what Chasam Sofer writes, that he thinks that this is how it's going to break down. That if the purpose was that it's there to help with the suda, so then we shouldn't allow mechila. And you just give across the board, and you're not going to be yotze without people actually taking it. And there's no encouragement or general possibility of mechila that's going to allow the mitzvah to be fulfilled. While if it's there to create bonds of friendship, so then, okay, it's the thought that counts. So this tshuva was hugely influential. So it seems that in the next 200 years, just about every discussion of shalach manas, whatever issue you come up with, somehow connects to this chakira of the Chasam Sofer. And if you ask, you know, should I put my shalach manos in a red basket or a blue basket? So somehow it also connects. Well, you know, red will look better on the table, so it's for the suda, it should be red, but blue is more cheerful, so if it's there to make friends, somehow whatever shaila you have has to always at least start with the premise of Chasam Sofer, and that it somehow fits. There's a tremendous loyalty to this chakira as at least the opening discussion in anything that is said about shalach manas. There was a little bit of a pushback that the Chalka Sasada was a Blazer Bein, it was a Blazer Deutsch, who was the Dayan of Bonihad, Hungary. So a Deutsch. So he wrote in his Tshuvas, Chalka Sasada, that he thought the whole thing was overblown. That there isn't really any machlokes between the Trumas Hadeshin and the Manos Halevi. They both agree that the purpose is to make friends. They both agree that it's there to create bonds of community. And that the only thing is that Trumas Hadeshin was emphasizing that Dabar Beito Matov, that if you're going to send a gift, so you might as well send a gift that is relevant to what people need. So since on Purim, they're worried about putting together a nice suda, so if you send them food, it'll be helpful for the suda. But it doesn't mean that there's a fundamental different conception here between the Trumas Hadeshin and the Manos Halevi. So that he was a lone voice in the wilderness protesting this, but for the most part, everyone who came after accepted that this was the Chakira, these Tutsdadim, and everything falls into place. You know, in terms of that, I wrote in my first sefer many years ago, I quoted this Chalkas Tutsada, and Rabbi Simon Shlita sent me a letter afterwards. I printed the next volume. So just a shkayach for quoting that Chalkas Tutsada, they should at least acknowledge there's some question about whether you have to be so meshubed to this Chakira. But the Chakira had a tremendous impact. And the Chasam Sofer himself continued the process a little bit by taking another step further. And he addressed the questions based on the Magen Avraham, the question of whether married women are obligated in their own shalach manos, or do they satisfy their obligation with their husband's shalach manos? Is it per family, or does she have to give her own? So we thought that that should also depend, that if we're assuming that it is about making friends, so she should have her own personal obligation to make friends also. But if it's about helping with the suda, so presumably, if you're somech al shulchan acherim, if you're not providing your own suda, financially speaking, she's certainly providing the suda in terms of the labor, but if you're not providing your own suda financially, so it doesn't make sense that you should be obligated to provide for others. So he took it to the next step. He thought this was another possible ramification of the chakira. So there are many, many, many more. We're going to have to end in a few minutes. We'll have to continue this sometime over the next week. But just so before I start listing any in the few minutes we have, anyone want to try to take a guess at any other questions you think might be totally on this? Any other issues you could bring up that might hinge on this question? Yeah, Zach?
Like, it is sufficient to give someone rich.
Okay, well, that's related, right? Although there is also a Ritva in his commentary to Megillas Esther and Daf Zayin. We mentioned it a little bit there about Shalach Manos. So there he says it's not a question whether it's sufficient, but the question is how much is sufficient. That let's say you have a very wealthy friend and you want to send a Shalach Manos, and you send a small little gift. So he's not going to even notice it. Or let's say, conversely, he sends you a small little gift. So it may theoretically supplement your Shalach Manos a little bit, but it's not going to necessarily impress you if you know that it's so far below his capability. So the Ritva has this chiddush that a davar katan me'ashir or li'ashir is not sufficient for Shalach Manos. That in either direction, if you give something too small to a wealthy person that he's not going to notice it, or he gives you something too small that you feel this is not impressive because it isn't what he's capable of, and he must not have given it too much attention. So some thought that this Ritva was reflecting also specifically the view of the Manos HaLevi, that it's not just that it has to supplement the meal, but it has to somehow create a sense of appreciation. And if that's not the case, then that's not going to make the cut. Think your own was up first?
I was going to say, maybe another nafkamina would be like what you give or how much. Right, we're kind of just talking about it right now.
Right, so
if it's about, I guess, the reyos, you can give however much that would make someone happy. If it's about a meal and actually, you know, creating the chiyuv suda, then you probably have to give more. Maybe also how you give it.
So it's also a chiyuv suda, just to clarify, we're not saying that it necessarily, although this is an interesting discussion later on.
To assist with
to it. Supplement the suda. Right.
So if it's about that, maybe it'd have to be more substantial, and then also maybe like how you give it. If it's about reyos, maybe you should be the one to actually give it in person versus. If it's about just supplementing the suda, however it gets there, it doesn't make a difference.
Okay, so that's also interesting. So the question of whether there is a notion of shlichus specifically for Shalach Manos is an interesting question. There's a discussion, it's primarily in the Tshuvas Binyan Sion. That was Rabbi Yaakov Avlinger, was one of the Rebbeim of the Shamshon of Falhirsch. So he has a tshuva that's really based on Iran, on Daf Zayin and Megillah also, where he raises this issue of, does it have to be Davka Mishloach Manos? Does it have to be specifically that you have an intermediary? Or can you give it yourself? So for many years, I thought this was the one issue that doesn't seem to connect to the Chakira. He finally broke free, because whether you're helping with the suda or trying to make the person happy, it would seem like it doesn't matter whether you give it directly or whether you give it through someone else. However, then I saw there's a tshuva in the Divrei Yoel, Sat Merav. He thought that there was a nafkamina, that imagine like this. It says if you have to paint the thing in kind of extreme terms. So Zach over here was our shear system last year, talking about how the shear system gets flooded with the Shalach Manos like crazy. So, but then he went to Eretz Yisrael, right? So let's say you were in Eretz Yisrael right now, let's say, and all of a sudden, per morning, you go out your door and you find a package of Shalach Manos that had been delivered, and it signed the Grateful Talmidim of last year. How touched would you be?
Very touched,
right? You would think that that's something that really shows the Hakar Satov, a little bit of what's due to a Shira assistant. You can't really microtope properly to a Shira assistant, but shows a little bit. Now, let's tweak it. So let's say, instead of being Eretz Yisrael, you're here in Washington Heights, and you're walking around on the street, and you see one of these guys carrying a bunch of packages, And they run into you in the street. Oh, hi, Zach. How you doing? Oh, you'd probably like one of these, right? Sure, here, happy Purim. So how impressed would you be at that? And you see they quickly erase the name that's on it, and quickly you started pulling off cards and switching things. Right? So maybe it would be a little bit less impressive. So Devaryoel writes that he thinks that that's a part of it, that the notion that there should be a mila of shlichus, because it's very hard to understand halachically, as far as I'm talking about, that normally when you have a halachic shlichus, Varavram talks about this, that we have a halachic shlichus, so the rule is that shlichus is usually kind of b'diavad, or you know, at least not the hider, mitzvah bo yosem b'shlucho, and there's no din that you can do with shlichus that's impossible to do yourself. That's actually a disqualification in hilchos shlichus. So if you're actually required shlichus, then there's no such construct usually as far as shlichus is concerned. So Rav and others explained that it wouldn't mean shlichus in the halachic sense. It would mean shlichus as just a messenger, literally. And that's why also it wouldn't have to be a bar shlichus. It could be a katan, as many people do. They send children to bring the shalach manas. Or it could be a non-Jew. It could be the mailman. It doesn't have to be somebody who's a bar shlichus. But if that's the case, so that's how the Sadma Rav suggests, that when you send something through someone else, it shows that there is forethought involved, that you actually are thinking about the other person and you planned it out and you had to get somebody else involved and send it that way. While if you give it directly, it's possible that it just happened to be ran into them. He has a chazal like this in Hochos Nida, actually. It talks about the chiba that's involved when you send a gift from afar as opposed to just bringing it, giving somebody who's right in front of you, that there is extra chiba involved. And he thought that was a reflection of that. So Lamaisa, not really makpid on this, and that even the Binyan Sion, who started the whole discussion, he concludes that we're not really makpid on requiring a shliach. But if there is a value to it, maybe it reflects this idea, like the Sadma Rav suggesting, that there's extra chiba involved. If you did require shlichus, so some of the Sfarim discussed it, Rav Shlomo Flush, Rav Shlomo Klivri discussed this in one of the Tshuvas, this gets into the whole Divrei Kabbalah issue, that when it comes to Dinam Darabanan, we can rely on a chazaka of shliachos to shlichuso. You send somebody on a mission, you're not obligated to check up afterwards if they actually did it. When it comes to Dinam Daraisa, so then you have to check and make sure that they actually accomplished the mission. So he writes that that's one of the nafkaminas. If you treat shalach manas as a din daraisa, because it's a divrei kabbalah, and you send it with someone else, then you're going to be obligated to check, and if not, then not. So there's a lot more to say about this. We'll have to find other opportunities. Yeah?
I just wanted to ask about, I know that when I was growing up, like schools did this, where like a parent could like make a donation to it, and like the school would put together shalach manas and then
out. Yeah, joint shalach manas. That could be related also. Rabbi Usher Bush Shlita has an article about this. It was Friedman's about this. They assume also that that might be related, that maybe there's a little bit less of a chiba when you know it's coming from a group. On the other hand, Hagufa, that is the chiba, you create the whole group. So, you know, maybe that itself is creating the bonds of giving. So, presumably, we try not to rely only on that, so in order to accomplish more. But the idea of group shalach manas as a part of what's happening is widely done. And it's a good shul fundraiser, also, I can tell you. But it is also maybe something that should be supplemented with something else.
And that you should also do your own shalach manas.
Do your own also. Yeah. To be safe. All right, so we should break now for mincha. I'm going to try to grab somebody, and then we'll have our shul just